Accession number 31468, Mr. Brian Ward, Reel 1. Can you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Ward?
Yes, November the 14th, 1937, Melton Mowbray.
Now, could you tell us a bit about your family background, you know, the, as you were growing up, what your parents did for a living?
My father was a senior workman at the local Midland Woodworking Company. He served his apprentice there and worked his way through till he retired when he was 65. My mother was born at Nether Broughton, but lived in Ab Kettleby, which is just up the road, and she went to the local schools, and when she left school she was in service at one of the local hunt lodges at Little Beaver Castle on Broughton Hill.
And where do you live in Melton?
I lived at number 12 Newport Avenue, still there. My father bought it brand new for £500 and we got married.
And was it a comfortable childhood? Your dad was in regular employment.
He was indeed, but I can only go back for the start of the war.
Well, you'd be two then, wouldn't you? Not even two.
No, my father enlisted in the RAF. He was in bomber command.
Now, what did he tell you about that? Because we're quite interested. Because that was quite a thing to be in bomber command.
But he was a ground crew maintenance. He was on Lancaster. He was on the Wellingtons for a start. Then he was on Lancasters. And with him being away, my mother went to work for Marcos of Grantham, which is an ammunition, and she worked shifts. So from 1940 onwards, I was farmed out with my mother's parents, my grandpeople parents, at Ab Kettleby. And from there I went to the local Ab Kettleby school.
Now, so you were evacuated, but informally amongst the family then?
That's right, yes.
Tell us a bit about that. I mean, how did you feel about that? I mean, did it bother you, or was it just nice to be with your grandparents?
Well, it was a terrace house, two up and down, and there was my grandma, my grandfather, an uncle that never married, and an aunt that never married. So it was a bit push a room, no running water, it was a pump, and we had a communal toilet down the garden, and on a Monday wash day you had to light the boiler and whatever. And I can remember my granddad's footsteps every evening putting the blackouts up, because he used to fetch me outside and say, oh, they're bombing Coventry or Birmingham again. And you could hear them going, they got that distinctive drone, you know, as they went across the Coventry. And he used to be very keen on putting the blackouts up. I can remember that. In fact, one evening I can remember bombs dropping on the local ironworks, Asabeel. In fact, the bomb craters are still there, and also they dropped a stick of bombs at Ab Kettleby. And when they never exploded though, but when they dug the bombs out, they had a local church fate, and you were charged 3p to go down the ladder to see where the bomb had gone through into the ground for church funds. So, you know, that was different. And during my time at Ab Kettleby, I joined the Boys' Brigade.
You must have been pretty young then.
Yes. And my
tell us what sort of activities did they do in the Boys' Brigade at that time?
Well, we couldn't go too far, but we used to go down to a local beauty spot called Owl Mouth. It's a spring where the River Smite emerged. And it was a place where gypsies used to stay. And I mean the gypsies, I don't mean the tinkers. I mean, with the piebald horses and the green caravans, and they're coming out around selling pegs and lucky white heather and things like that. It was a proper, and it was called the Kettleby Half Acre, because if you go around the back of Kettleby St Peter's Church, there's a big, I just forget who left bequeathed it, but they call it the Kettleby Half Acre, and it was like a camping beauty spot. And it's quite a large place. It's a hunting covert. and it's full in the summer, spring it's full of bluebells. It's quite an attractive place.
So that's where you went with
Cat? That's where we used to go. And then also we used to meet once a week in the parish village hall, the parish hall, where you done activities like, I don't know, fieldcraft, trying to learn knots, how to boil an egg. And
sounds a bit like the Boy Scouts.
That's right. It's
very religious. It's a religious.
It was, because the man who run it was the local vicar, a bloke called Reverend Wright. I always remember him. Yeah, Reverend Wright. Yes.
And so you enjoyed the Boys Brigade? That's.
I think so. I must have done. Well, there wasn't anything else to do in the village, was there?
Now, what about your education at Kettleby? I mean,
it was an infant school till you was. I were there from till 1945.
At Kettleby.
At Kettleby. Yeah, you're pretty well all in the same class, no matter what your age group. I always remember there's a big stove in the middle of the classroom. The teacher was a Miss Pickard. She taught my mother, actually.
And did you get on well there? I mean, how did you do at school? I mean, you're still only at the early stages of school, then, weren't you?
I think I struggled because the classes were so large. And it came home to me when I got moved in 46 to a local schools in Melton, where we started to be graded. And it sort of took me 2 years before the potential came out, and I gradually moved to the A classes instead of the B classes.
I'll come back. So, anything else about your time at Kettleby?
Well, yes, I used to go with my uncle. He was the local farm labourer at one of the big farms in the village. And I used to, if I wasn't at school, I used to pack off and go with him, because it was mainly horse. There weren't so many tractors around. It was mainly horse work. And if the weather were fine, I used to be with him for hours on end.
Doing what? What type of work? Helping with?
Helping, you know, fetching and carrying. Couldn't carry much, but I was there, you know, sort of on hand to fetch things or do things or look after the animals or...
How'd you get on with the local lads? Were you seen as an evacuee, or were you seen?
No. We did have evacuees there. We come up from London. We certainly did.
Now, how'd you get on with them? Because we've got lots of tales from their perspective. Well, what did you think of them?
Bit strange for a start because of the Cockney accents. But yeah. I mean, there was at school. They joined in with the sport, and oh yeah, there were no.
Did they share the school with you?
Or? Oh yes, yes. They came into the. Came into the local school.
Was it morning, afternoon, or did they just come to your school?
They came to our school for all day and for the at least 4 or 5 years that they were there.
And no fighting with them then? Because sometimes there was trouble with the local kids.
No, there's only two or three of them anyway. So, and they stopped with a family called the Newmans on the New Row at Kettleby. Yeah, no problems.
Now, did you have any street parties when the war ended in Kettleby?
Yes.
What were they like?
Brilliant. I've got photographs somewhere. Outside the Sugarloaf Inn at Kettleby. All dressed up in fancy dress and tea and buns. Yes.
You were young, you wouldn't know. Was it a mixed ages party? Were people drinking and having a good time as
well? Oh, definitely. Yeah, it was outside. It was in the pub yard. Oh yeah, we got Union Jacks, and I seem to remember a bloke called Sammy Cliffy were playing a concertina type thing, and everybody were dressed for the occasion, and oh yes, it was a real party.
I mean, you were still only what, seven?
That's right, that I can remember.
Did you understand the war?
Only when my father came home and my mother come to fetch me to go and see him.
Well, tell us that. Now that's an interest, because you must have barely known your father.
That's right.
Tell us about that. How was it when you know?
Well, the first time I knew something was wrong, when we had this house in Newport Avenue, and my mother said, "You better come and see your father, who's been injured," and we went down and he was in his blues. And his arm was like that. And he was all in the plaster all the way down. He'd been hit with a propeller on a Lancaster when it was starting up. You know, they pull the chocks away, don't they, before the start. And I don't think he got away quick enough, and he done him on his arm.
And what was it like seeing your dad again after?
Well,
had you seen him on leave and things like that, or had he just not been there?
Not been there, really, no. But having said that, he did get posted to Cottesmore. And my mother used to take me on a Sunday afternoon. There used to be a local bus service out there called Bland's. And we used to arrange to take a picnic, and the bus used to drop us off just outside Cottesmore Airfield. And I can see my father now on a push bike coming from dispersal over to the lane, you know, all in his whatever, works uniform, for a spend an hour with us while we had tea and buns before we went back on. He's come out. I can remember that very, very well at Cottesmore.
So he came out in what, 46 or?
46, yes.
Did it affect your relationship with him, do you think? Him being away, not his fault, obviously. Or were you able to settle back into what you call normal?
Well, I think we set in, yeah. I don't envision any problems now. No, it was. I think we got on with it. We just got on with it.
We're not looking for problems.
No.
Now tell us about. You said your education had been affected. Now, how did it picked up a bit when you got back to Melton?
It did indeed.
Now tell us about your education in Melton. Which school did you go to?
I went to the primary junior school on Aspbury Road. That's up to 11-year-old. I failed my 11 plus because, well,
you hadn't caught up by then.
I hadn't caught up because the lady had taught my mother and probably mother's generation, and was about 40 or 50, because not only was it Kettleby, you got Holwell and Wartonby village children in the same, so it was a heaving with class, you see. And you all have had sandwiches at lunchtime, so. But as I say, when I got back to the other school, after a couple of years, I did progress to the A classes, but I didn't pass my 11 plus. And I went up to what you call the modern boys' school.
In Melton. Now, how did you do there? What subjects were you good at? What were you bad at? What did you like, dislike?
Oh, I was very good at geography. I wasn't too bad on maths. English, I was A-OK. And I was in the A classes all the while. And I was always in the top 5, top 10 once we got going.
Was there ever any chance of transferring to the grammar school? I mean, you were obviously doing well.
No, there wasn't.
Once you're in, you're in.
You was in the system, that was it. On the fourth year, you was told what sort of career you was going for. Like carpentry, woodwork, engineering, farming, or general. And I got moved into the what you call the general, people who couldn't make up their mind.
How old did you get any qualifications? It wasn't tailored so much.
No, nothing. You know, just got your school reports saying must try harder or whatever.
And you'd leave school at 14, would you?
Yes, 14.
So that be
Christmas 1952.
And what were you going to do? You hadn't made your mind up. You then had to make your mind up.
I made my mind up. I got an apprentice engineer with Stanton and Staveley. One of their works was on Assop Hill, Orwell Works, Ironworks.
And what did they make?
Railway chairs. You know, the chairs to put the sleepers on. Ingots, pipes, manhole covers. During the war, they'd made bombs and mortars and things like that. Made, you know, it was quite a big firm.
Now, you were an apprentice.
I was an apprentice engineer, heavy engineering. I'd done a 6-year apprenticeship there. That's one day release and 2 nights evening class.
Now, what are the skills you're learning as an apprentice heavy engineer?
Fitting and turning, machining, lathes, milling machines, shapers, accurate. We had to go to a school for a start at Hilson to the main firm at Stanton. They got their own training school, and we had to go there for a year. And there was we used to live in a hostel in Ilkeston, and the bloke who run it and his wife, he was an ex-PTI, and we used to meet him on this sports field at Kirkhallam. We used to have to do a cross country every morning, whatever the weather, before we went to Saudi work. And it was a proper training school with the instructors. And in the school, we got people who were training to be pattern makers and moulders. And we were the engineers, and electricians.
But you were the fitting part.
We were the fitting and engineer, everything engineer.
Did you enjoy it?
Yes, I did. I did. Considering I'd not really, because at the end of the day, I thought of living at Kettleby, thought I was going to be a farmer or something like that. But no, yeah, I did. Yeah,
this is better than farming, then. Well, to you.
Well, yes, you were inside and you didn't get wet. But it was a very good education. I'll come on to it later. But it was, I can sit here now, and in the fitting shop there was over 100 personnel in this fitting shop, and I can still tell you where each individual stood or worked. Still, after 50 odd years, I can remember where they all and all the names. So it wasn't all that bad when you can remember that. You can remember the foremans and the charge hands. And we had a lot of departmental activity, like local, between each department, cricket, football,
well,
skittles.
Well, that's exactly the next thing I was going to... Interests outside work, you know, as you're growing up from 14 to, well, to 21, 22, because you deferred. Well,
I was deferred, yes.
What were was sport important to you?
I used to play football, local teams, yes, and cricket.
Any good or just, you know...
No.
For fun?
I managed to get in the team, put it like that.
Was sport important to you, though?
No, not really. Not really, no.
But you did. What, any other big hobbies?
Shooting.
Now tell us about that. Fairly, well, not terribly, but it's... what type of shooting?
Game shooting.
So how did you get into that? Was that from when you were at Kettleby? Or you're too young.
But in my late teens, there was a rifle club at the... Hollow Works, 2.2 rifle, and I got into that, and I was a bit useful when it come to wielding a weapon, and then...
Right from the start?
Yes. It's sort of a natural... So it came from there, you see.
Did you... what put you onto the game parts of shooting? I mean, how was it organised? Or was it organised?
Well, I used to go beating for a start on these big estates, and it sort of progressed from there.
So they let you become... participate?
Yeah, well, at times, yes. And when the local farmers was cutting the corn and the rabbits were coming out of the corn, you know, you had a pot shot, what it was. Yeah.
And did you have your own, was it 12 bore or?
Well.
Or was it 0.2, you know?
No. My wife, who is now, when I first started courting, they was from a farming family at Holwell Village. And the father-in-law had a 20 bore on the beam in the kitchen, and it started from there. I sort of took a liking to that. He always reckoned if I had a gun, he wouldn't to bother with his daughter, you know. It was one of them sort of jobs. But yes.
So any other hobbies? So a bit of sport, but not that much. No. Game shooting?
Yeah.
Anything else?
No, not really.
You weren't in any military organisation at all, the ATC or anything?
No, training
corps or anything?
No. I was deferred like till I was 21.
Now tell me about the deferment. Was there a process? They did defer apprentices, but was it a process you had to go through to get deferred? Or?
Well, we had the forms to fill in, and the firm had to ensure that you did take... You had to do an exam every year, you know, through the college. A practical and a theory exam, and then you, if you passed, you move up to the second year, third year, fourth year, and then you got your final City and Guild. It was City and Guild's course, and I got my City and Guild's engineering and the something else engineering. I can't remember. But anyway, what you'd need now is university standards or whatever, because the qualifications have moved on, haven't they?
So. You were deferred, and that was just automatic as long as you kept passing.
As long as I kept me an apprentice and sort of behave yourself. And
now, what was the process of the call up? Because you were called up very late, weren't you?
I was one of the last to go.
So when were you called up? What was the process?
When I was 21 in November 1958, I had a card to say report to Charles Street in Leicester for a medical and interview.
How did you feel about that? You must
apprehensive. The Queen's shilling and all that, you know, big deal, a shilling. I passed my medical, no problem.
Do you remember the medical?
I do indeed.
Tell us about it.
Well, you've seen it on the carry-on films, have you?
Tell us, because, you know...
Well, we're all, the line of blokes all stripped off, probably, you know, inhibitions a bit. And this doctor walking along the line, you know, with a coffin and looking and bending over and whatever, eyes, teeth, ears, you name it.
Was it a proper medical? Do you think he'd have failed if there was anything wrong with it? Or was everyone going to pass?
Well, no, one or two got done with flat feet. But don't forget, it was 59. You're getting towards the end of the... Conscription was sort of being muted to be finishing, wasn't it? So I don't know. I don't really know on that one.
So when did you have to actually get anything else? Your interview. How did your interview go?
Oh, well, I took my papers with me, apprenticeship papers, and I sat in front of this officer. I can't remember his rank. He said, oh, yes, he said, you've done a six-year engineering apprentice. He said, that's good. He said, you can go in the Royal Engineers, REME, an ordnance corps. I said, that'll do me. I said, brilliant. Well, he says, it's a waste. 6 years, engineering, fully time serves. What a waste. I said, right, that'll do me. January 1959, card, will you report to Glen Parva, South Wigston, for the 19th of February, for the Royal Leicestershire Regiment. Gravel crunching.
Where was that? Glen Parva?
Glen Parva.
Is that a barracks?
Yeah, but barracks. It's Young Offenders of the place now, in South Wigston, Leicester.
Is that actually part of Leicester?
South Wigston.
Wigston.
South Wigston. It's an area of Leicester, if you like, a village just outside Leicester.
And you were to report there. Was this run by the 1st Battalion Leicester, or was it just a general service?
No, it was part of their depot, their regimental depot.
So they were going to train you, then you'd go to the 1st Battalion?
Yes. We had 12 weeks training there.
Now, what was your first... You know when you turn up at the barracks, slightly disgruntled, I expect, in January...
What a shock. What a shock. There were two blokes on the guard room, on guard, with rifles, and I was told to report to the guard room. And there was expecting me, because he looked at the list, and he gave me number... on the back of a fag packet.
Your army number?
My army number on the back of a fag packet. Then he said, you go to that building over there. So I walked to that building over there with my suitcase, and I'd got a duffel coat, a yellow scarf, you know, really with it in those days. And some bastard shouted, hey up you, what the... You're doing right, the... What do you think you're doing on there? And I thought, well, he's not talking to me, I've only just arrived. I don't know anybody. And this bloke shouted again. All of a sudden, he run at me. He got a red sash on and a big sticker under his arm. And he got hold of me with the duffel coat with those on. You, whatever. What are you doing walking on my sacred ground? And it was the parade ground. I said, well, the bloke sent me across there. He said, that bloke is a corporal. You know, so get back and walk around. So that was my first, you know.
That was the RSM, I presume, was it?
It turned out to be a corps sergeant. And that was my first, I thought, God, what have I let myself in here for? So anyway, during the day, other sods and sobs came in from various parts of Nottinghamshire, Leicestershire and Warwickshire, and we was put into two blocks. I think there was four rooms, 20 personnel in each room.
Now what were these barrack rooms, can you describe what one of them looked like?
Yes, built in 1854, two storey. The blutions are in the middle, so the blocks, the barrack rooms were either side, with the blutions in the middle, and the concrete stairways to the others, to the rooms. and the same other side, and each one was named after a battle honour, either First World War or the Zulu Wars or whatever, South East War was.
So what was it when you went in your room, what did you see?
Iron bedsteads and a green locker.
And how many beds? How many into a room, roughly?
Probably 30.
So 15 aside?
Yeah, just iron bedsteads.
Was there a corporal's room at the end, or an NCO's room at
there
the
was
end?
No, they had a different accommodations. And once we got all assembled and names read and whatever, and he introduced himself, for want of a better word, we were marched to the stores for kitting out.
Now, what kit were you given?
We couldn't carry it all. As you walk down the road, the bloke behind the counter said, size 7, size 6, 5'4, boots, 2 pair of boots, 2 battle dresses, drawers, tracks, that's under drawers, like parachute things in green, 2 pair of socks, laces, a housewife, that's with needles and threads, and that, mess tins, knife, fork and spoon, berry, a laced, like a scarf, camouflage scarf, 2 shirts, denims, and webbing. Belts, 2 belts, ammo kit, small pack, large pack, steel helmet, water bottles, pajamas, towels, button stick, brushes.
Did this fit you? I mean, they didn't measure you, did they? Did they just guess?
Because they walked by, said, "Oh yeah, 36, 24."
And did it fit?
No.
Was it adjusted later on by tailors, or was it just?
No, not really, because you're only there for 12 weeks.
So you just had to put up with it.
We had to put up with it. You learn to iron and bull boots and.
I'll come to preparing for kids. Yeah. What about? Did you ever have to have a haircut? Because. Funnily enough,
every Thursday morning, 10 o'clock.
What was the first haircut like? Because in those days, we have an impression of teddy boys and people.
My father told me what to expect, so I went to a local hairdresser who was known to scalping you. And I went to him, and he did. But when I got there, it wasn't enough. But what was so good and laughable, we'd got teddy boys in the.
That was the style then?
Yeah, and someone would cry, and the bloke would just go, oops, sorry, and straight over the top. You know, teddy boys, you know, they've been really Frankie Vaughan style, you know, Frankie Vaughan, all that.
So, but you hadn't been that bothered about your hair? Because, I mean, different people. I mean,
well, I wasn't really bothered, and he said, sit down, and he'd put a sheet or a blanket, and that was it.
Now, the way we look at training is to look at a typical day. And then pick things out of it, as we said. So how would your day, during this 12 weeks, the basic training, how would your day start?
Reveille, you'd hear the bugle go, reveille. Then a big corporal would come with a pickaxe handle and smash the bottom of your bed. You know what I'm going to say now, don't you? Hands off, cocks on socks.
They really said that, then?
Yep. Mess tins, down to the cookhouse.
For breakfast.
And the bloke behind the counter, or the thing used to say, give them plenty, one each. That was the saying, give them plenty, one each.
Now, what was it? We look at all the food together. What was the food like as compared to what you were used to? What did you think of the army food there at Parva?
Not very clever.
Why not?
Because it was all heaped on one plate, on, you know.
So presentation.
There are no choice, put it like that.
So no choice, and the presentation wasn't good. Well, they just dumped it on your plate. Was it actually all right in itself? It might have looked horrible, but, I mean, were the ingredients reasonable?
Well, I've always never been worried about food, so, yeah, I ate it, you know. Okay, it was what we call pom, the powdered potatoes and things like that, but.
Was there enough of it? I mean,
oh yes, yeah, yes, it would be. But as you got in training, for instance, my mother-in-law, well, future mother-in-law, when she see me after training, she cried because I'd lost that much weight. She thought I was ill. I mean, I was pretty. During my apprenticeship, I'd been to these outward bound schools because I'd done quite well in my engineering training. I went to Ullswater for a month on these outward bound jobs, you know, rock hanging and abseiling and going across. We used to have to run down to Ullswater every morning naked and jump into the water, for instance.
So, well, what we might call adventure training.
Yeah, and then later I went with Sir John Hunt. That's name dropping, isn't it? At Bexicoid in North Wales on a similar sort of thing. So we'd camped out under ground sheets in the mountains, so I knew really what to expect once I got in the army, you see. So it wasn't all doom and gloom as regards the food.